This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/currentgeek and enter the promo code CURRENTGEEK. And by Stay Roasted at stayroasted.com/geek, where right now you can get a free bag of coffee. You only pay shipping. Learn more later in the show about stayroasted.com/geek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with the mallet-wielding Tom Merritt. Hello.
It's a gavel. It's not a mallet.
I don't know. It's kind of mallety. Right?
I mean, I don't know. Is a gavel a subsection of types of mallets?
Sure.
Because you're right.
Sure.
A gavel is very mallet, but not any mallet. You know, a mallet you use for putting in drywall is not a gavel.
Could you use your gavel to tenderize meat? Because if you can, then the answer, we know the answer already.
I don't know that I would. I suppose I could.
I wouldn't either.
Scott, before we get to introducing our guest, I want to apologize for lying to you.
Oh, I didn't realize I'd been lied to, yeah. So tell me.
This is our Ricky Lake moment. Does anybody watch Ricky Lake anymore?
No.
Is that even a thing anymore? I don't watch a lot of daytime TV. I said I had a hard out at 5 o'clock today.
Yeah.
When I thought I was going to be recording a show at 5 o'clock, and then I forgot until just this moment to tell you that that show got canceled.
Oh,
Can go as long as you want.
Just for tonight, you mean? Not for real. Not forever. Just cancel
not forever,
tonight.
Just for now.
Okay.
As Sunvolt once wrote.
Well, as he also wrote, John Jagger's on the show. He's our guest. He is the co-host of Azeroth Roundtable Core and loads more. John, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for having me. Yeah. I'm happy to be here again.
Now, you were part of a twofer group that we had coming, two guests. One of them could not come last minute, and we thought, you know what? We'll take John on his own. He's a known quantity. It's not a problem. So here you are, man.
That's what I do. Yeah. When I find out I'm going to share the spotlight, there are accidents.
Is that what happened?
That's very interesting. Now, before we get to
you got jaggered.
Exactly. Before we get to the top headlines, I had to at least throw it past you. I know we're going to talk about this on Tuesday. And I also realize it's a bit of a niche question for a show like Current Geek. But because you and I do the Core podcast together, where we discuss all things Heroes of the Storm by Blizzard Entertainment, when you heard that Dustin Browder had left the team as team lead and moved somewhere else within Blizzard, were you surprised, shocked, excited, sad? Like, where's your heart on that right now?
I started sad, and then I read that he's basically been gone for a while, and then I thought, well, okay, it's like that old saying, how can you miss something if you don't know it was gone? I don't think that's a saying.
Nope.
That's made up.
Nope.
I've made that up.
Say it's a song.
No, I remember that song.
You don't know what you got until it's gone. That's the song.
Unless you didn't know it was already gone and then you're okay with it.
If you didn't know it was gone already.
Well, our hint should have been at BlizzCon. He did not get on stage or do anything with Heroes of the Storm panels.
We just thought he was sick from the hot dogs.
Yeah, we didn't know. So a lot of shakeups at Blizzard. I just thought it was interesting. Tune in next Tuesday at heroesforyou.com and listen to our commentary on why we think Dustin Browder left and what we think the new guy is going to do.
Oh, yeah, and I've got some tinfoil hat conspiracy theories.
Oh, you always do.
We can tease that, too.
Okay, all right. Tinfoil hats.
Does it involve villains of the storm?
Just
turns it all on its head?
Pretty good.
Now that you say that, I mean, there are villains of the storm in there, but they don't call them that.
Yeah.
All right. Tom's
on to play from the other end. I don't know.
I like it. All right. Well, here's your headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what's happening in the world of nerd news?
Well, Scott Johnson, you're a fan of The Expanse.
I love it.
Right? Yep. The television show and the books. I know.
Love the book. I just finished Caliban's War. Loved every second of it.
You should be very excited then, because Babylon's Ashes, book 6 in The Expanse series, is out this week. So you're going to need to hurry up, read the rest of the book so you can catch up and start reading that. But at the same time, a new trailer was unveiled on Entertainment Weekly, showing off more of season 2 of the TV show, The Expanse, which returns on February 1st. And the trailer basically says you need to pick a side.
All right. Here's the question. So I asked you, I don't want to give anything away, but I asked you a few weeks ago, hey, Tom, will a certain character show up for me in book two? And you said, do you really want to know? I said, yeah, I don't really care about spoilers. I'm just curious. You said yes. So I said, okay, cool. So I thought I was going to see it pretty early, maybe back third of the book or something. No, it's literally the last sentence of Caliban's War.
Like, but I didn't lie.
Like, before any, like, acknowledgements or appendix or any of that, just right there, and then a chunk of space, and then book's over. That really took me by surprise. So you both spoiled me and didn't at the same time in a really weird way.
Oh, good. I'm glad that worked out for
you. Yeah, because by the time I got there, I thought, well, he's not been here. Tom was fooling. Tom was teasing me, and then sure enough, you're right. That series is awesome. John, have you been up on The Expanse? Is that a thing you've watched?
No, you've been trying to sell me on it. And you know what? It's not like you're selling somebody that's like, I don't want to buy what you're selling, Scott. You're knocking around a house that doesn't want you. It sounds like it's right up my alley. I just need to take the plunge. And it sounds like I dig the books, too, which is a good thing for me, because I think the last thing I read was the last Dresden Files book. Mm. So I'm ready to dive into something. It's been a while. It's been a long while.
Not a bad last thing to have read, by the way.
No.
Hasn't read the Dresden
Files. Yeah, Dresden Files is pretty good. I haven't read any of the books, but I've seen some of the show, but I want to. I wouldn't even know about The Expanse had it not been for Tom. And, you know, seeing previews for that new series, I thought, what is this? And then you were like, oh, you got to this and that and read the books and stuff. And it's one of those... unlike, say, Game of Thrones or others, I'm enjoying both of those things in such a weird way. Like, I guess this is not that unusual, but I enjoy the book as much as I'm enjoying the show, and I am kind of having that feeling that what they're going to do different in the show will be a fun ride, because I'm really curious to see how they get over some of the, let's call them, technical hurdles that exist in the story so far. But I haven't seen this new trailer yet, so I don't exactly know what to expect. The last season ended before the first book ended.
Oh,
so.
Man, you should have watched the trailer. It's so good.
I know.
So good. Really? It just got me pumped. I was already excited for this coming season, but it like really gets you pumped up, because it's showing you all the beats. And like you say, if you read the books and watch the show, you can like them independently, really. They have the same flavor. And obviously the same characters. But for instance, for me, Holden, who is the captain of the Rocinante, I think of him more like a Scott Bakula, like a little bit older, a little bit balder, a little bit more humble, maybe, than the TV Holden. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I don't like the TV Holden. I love what they're doing with the TV Holden. And he fits into my image of Holden enough that I don't feel like, well, they changed him. It's like, oh, this is kind of a younger take on the Holden that I was imagining. Also, in the TV show, they give you a lot of the Earthside intrigue early. And so you're actually learning more about why it happens than you do in the book when it comes in later.
Yeah, that's true. Also, characters like Amos, I find that there's always a split. People either really like his book version, or they like him better in the show. And I have come to really appreciate both versions of that character. And there are others like him. And also, there's a new character I've never seen but only have in my head, and that's Bobby. She's from Mars.
Well, that's another reason that you need to watch the trailer, because
I'm guessing
Bobby
she's in there,
shows up in the first few frames.
Is she in the suit and stuff? In the suit?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, John, right. You gotta watch it.
I gotta ask you guys this though. So, as Expanseperts,
as we prefer to be called, thank you.
Yes, by the well-known name. Yeah. Where should I start? Let's say I'm all in. Should I start book or should I start show?
Oh, man. Tom, you're a better pick at this than me.
I often prefer starting book and then narrow it, because the show will narrow it down and I get to see the characters come alive. In this case, I'd probably, as your Expansepert, prescribe you the television show first, because it's easier to get into.
Okay.
It's, you know, if you don't have a lot of time, you can just start watching the show. And then when you read the books, I'll go with the brushwood theory, which is when you read the books, you're just adding more. You're not going to get disappointed because something isn't there, or it doesn't look the way you expected, or something like that. I don't think you can do it wrong, though. I started with the books because there was no TV show, and I loved it. The crew is sort of the spiritual successor to the Firefly crew to me. They're not mimicking the Firefly crew. I just mean that they have this dynamic as a crew that is as special and good and unique to them as that dynamic was of the Firefly crew.
Yeah, and there's also, there's moments in this book, the first or the second book, where you think a certain thing has happened and you are absolutely certain that your entire worldview is about to end because somebody might have died. And it's a horrible, horrible feeling. And I knew that moment when I went, oh yeah, that's why I like these books. This crew is totally my crew now. I am way into what these people are doing, what they're about, where they're at in their lives. And you want to follow them all the way through. For people at home who haven't heard of this, the best description I could give for the show, tonally, would be somewhere between, oh gosh, Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, and maybe a little bit of Babylon 5, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of a weird mix. But John, you'll like this. The lady in it who plays the UN secretary of whatever she is, I forget her.
Abra Solara. She's the deputy
chief secretary general, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, the ruling body on Earth is now the UN in this book. She's really fantastic. One of my favorite characters in the book by far. In the show, she's played by the lady who does Anna's voice in Overwatch.
Okay.
And she's in your favorite game series of all time, Mass Effect. So
that's right.
You're gonna love that. That alone should get you in. Is all I'm saying.
That's enough.
All right.
Just have to say Mass Effect. You can really get me with anything. You could be like, hey, John, you should watch Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And I would say why, and you'd say Mass Effect. And I might not get the connection.
You should eat more leafy greens because Mass Effect.
Because Mass Effect.
Oh, man.
Shepard. Jeez. Here's what I would say.
It's going to be rough.
I'll tap this on top of it. I will say there's a lot of Mass Effect in here, too. And I don't mean that just because you said that. Like, really, there is. Like a lot of the tone of Mass Effect.
I mean, they pitch it as Battlestar Galactica meets Game of Thrones because it definitely has a bit of that Galactica reboot vibe in the way it's shooting space as real, mm-hmm. right? Like it's silent when you're in space and mm-hmm. things can't just move any direction they want because there is no air mm-hmm. there. And the books were very good about that, too. Having descriptions of things taking a long time to get from one place to another, because guess what? We don't have warp drive or anything.
Yeah.
The Game of Thrones aspect comes because you have Mars and Earth battling over control of the exploration of the solar system, and the Belters are sort of an independent group of colonists who have been in the asteroid belt long enough to develop their own distinct culture, and they're rising up against Earth and the Mars.
Yeah, and they play with physics a lot in the book, especially yeah. where they're very true to things like how long is the lag for a message to get from where they are in the inner planets back to Earth so they can get word back to somebody, or how long does a reply take to get back to them? There's limitations there. They talk about the differences between microgravity and, you know, a full G of gravity in a ship that's created by thrust, and when it has to be more, they gotta be drugged up so their bodies don't fall apart. Like, super cool attention to detail like that without ever feeling like math class. It just feels like it's a fun romp in every way, but also just laced with science and stuff we know about space. And it doesn't pretend that we're in the Gamma Quadrant meeting, you know, rumply-nosed aliens from Bajor or something. It doesn't try to take us there. Nothing wrong with those things, but this one likes to keep things nice and tight there in our solar system, which is super interesting. So anyway, we've said enough, but I will tell you right now, people, listen, read and watch the Expanse novels, the Expanse TV show. I can't wait for book 3.
Didn't mean this to turn into an intervention to get Jagger to watch and read the Expanse. New trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy is out featuring Baby Groot. Curious how we feel about Fox on the Run by Sweet as the music. That movie is coming out May 5th, 2017. And the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming premiered last night with plenty of Robert Downey Jr. And that movie is coming out July 7th.
We have an email later about the Spider-Man trailer. So I'll save that for them. But I think it's a really good question about it. In terms of the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, I trust James Gunn. I trust this cast. I trust the writers. I trust Guardians to pull it off a second time. But there's still a piece of me that when I'm presented with CGI raccoon shooting stuff and tiny baby Groot running around doing business, just a little part of me gets nervous, just a tiny, tiny bit, even though they proved last time they can totally pull this off. Like, they can totally do it. And everyone's freaking out about Baby Groot. But, John, are you at all worried about tiny trees and the world of CGI raccoons?
So I'll say this. I didn't like this trailer as much as the one that came before it, the teaser. And I think for me, you know, I laughed and I said, I walked away saying I want to see that movie. So I guess mission accomplished. But I think some of the humor fell a little flatter than I was expecting it to. But I'm with you. I have faith in it. You know, I still like the characters. And I think my fondness for the characters that developed in that first movie is going to carry over to this one, unless they really drop the ball. But James Gunn seems to have put up a protective fence around all these characters and everything and said, nope, nobody touch them. I want control. And he's very protective of it. And so I have faith it's gonna turn out good.
Do you agree, Tom?
I had no misgivings about this trailer. I just saw it and laughed. I'm probably worse for it, but I really did not feel any of that weirdness of like, oh, it's kind of missing its mark. Like, I really just totally was like, oh yeah, that's so Star-Lord. Of course he would say that. Oh, it's good to see Rocket back. You know, it just really sat well with me.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait. And we got till when? The 7th of July? No. May.
So no, May 5th.
May 5th. That's what it is. Why am I thinking the 7th of anything?
Because that's when Spider-Man comes out.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Because the Spider-Man trailer. Yeah. Speaking of that, real quick here. Well, no, we'll get to it in the email. The email makes a really important question, I think, about where Spider-Man now sits given all of this MCU stuff. So we'll get to that
Stay
later.
Stay tuned, folks. You won't want to turn away from this episode of Current Geek. We'll talk Spider-Man a little later in the show.
That's right.
But for now, Pebble CEO Eric Mijakovsky posted that Fitbit has acquired Pebble this week. Pebble will shut down, cease manufacturing products. Many of its employees will join Fitbit's wearable software teams, but not all. One-on-one support is being ended. Existing Pebble devices will continue to work, and there will be community support. The warranty support has been withdrawn. APIs and SDKs will continue to operate, but cloud services will be phased out and handed over to the community. So that kind of support should continue. Pebble 2 has been canceled, and Kickstarter backers who have not received a reward will get a full refund. And man, people are angry.
Yeah, people are pissed about this. I got a question, though, we never talked about this week, because this has been a story all week, and people have been talking about it here and there. Daily Tech News Show had a lot to say about it. But the one question I haven't heard anybody talk about is this warranty thing being stopped. You know, suddenly your warranty is no longer good through the whatever it is. Let's say it's 2 years or whatever. I didn't think that was legal. I thought you had to, as a company, part of the end user agreements you make are both ways. Like, if
I'm guessing that there's a provision in that warranty that says if the company goes away, your warranty goes away, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. Keep in mind that the intricacies of this acquisition aren't as simple as Pebble is being bought by Fitbit. Fitbit is buying assets from Pebble and very carefully is not buying Pebble. They're buying the rights to use the name, the rights to use the software. They're hiring a bunch of the employees, but they are not picking up any of Pebble's outstanding legal obligations is what it seems like to me. And in fact, I'm going to pull over an email from a guy in Schenectady, Savo, who wrote into Daily Tech News Show, and I hope he doesn't mind me bringing this along, but he wrote into Fitbit asking what current Pebble customers should do with the cancellation of the orders, and they told him, we would like to let you know that we do not have information about a tracker that was not designed by Fitbit, so we are unable to provide you with information that you are requesting.
Wow.
Which is not what you want to hear if you're a Pebble fan looking for a little bit of reassurance here.
That's not even what you want to hear if you're a Fitbit fan and you're excited that your company that you like has acquired Pebble and might do some cool things using their assets. I mean, that just seems like weird PR. I understand. I mean, Fitbit's a decent sized company. They have an entire division dedicated to support, and maybe left hand isn't talking to the right hand exactly right now about what they're supposed to be on message for when it comes to this Pebble transition. But ooh, I don't like that sounding. That's a terrible email to get. I really don't like that at all. John, you ever been, do you have a Pebble first of all, and how do you feel about wearables in general? And is this Would this make you mad if you did have a Pebble?
I would probably be mad. I really can't fault people for being upset. I mean, there's one part of me that wants to say, ah, these things happen, and they do. But that doesn't change that my experience as a user and purchaser of products or person who's excited or interested in products, you know, is being less than stellar. I almost bought in on the first Pebble, and then I decided that I never wear a watch, and so maybe I shouldn't do it. And that's what kept me out of it. But this is rough. I mean, this reminds me very much of a company I applied for a job for, got bought up by another company right at the time I was interviewing. Mm. And I went over to the offices that the application had told me to go to, and it was a big empty building. And a security person said, oh no, you need to go across the street to this building. So I went over there and talked to them. And they said, who are you? And I said, you know, John Jagger, I'm here for an interview. And they said, we don't have you for an interview. And I said, well, they said to come here. And they said, why don't you go over to the other building and ask them? And I said, no, there's nobody in the other building. It's empty. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then they made me wait in the lobby for a while. And then someone came down and said, we don't know what's going on. We'll call you.
And they never called you.
No, they never called.
Oh, that's a big stinker.
So that's kind of how this feels to me. A lot of people without ducks in a row.
Yeah.
They've got ducks all over the place.
Those ducks are not, they're in something other than a row.
I'll be honest. I still think that I still think a lot of this has to do with feelings and not actual damage. Mm. If you're a Pebble owner, your Pebble should continue to work. And yes, you can't get one-on-one support, so that sucks. But there is a community out there. And frankly, I mean, if your one-on-one support's going to be like what this Fitbit guy said to Savo, you probably isn't that helpful. You'll probably get better help from the community anyway. Mm. And the cloud services are going to continue, and they're not going to just shut them down. They're going to try to find somebody who can take them over. It may get worse if they can't find a community that is willing to take over the cloud service and all of that. So it's not the end of the world if you're a Pebble owner. It sucks if you're a Pebble orderer who hasn't got their Pebble yet, and now they won't, right? And Pebble sent out a note saying, we are going to get you your refund within 2 weeks. We're working with Kickstarter to make sure it happens fast. So there's a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, but Kickstarter refunds don't happen for 90 days sometimes. And Pebble's working to make that not be an issue. But the fact of the matter is, when you get sold for parts, there's not a lot of resources left to take care of people. So they're not going to be able to do the good feelings things that a company would usually do. Fitbit would have to do that. And it doesn't seem like Fitbit is interested because they're like, there's not many of those anyway. So we lose some Fitbit customers. Big deal.
Yeah. I was trying to find a parallel to this and to just sort of tack this on the end of this conversation about Fitbit buying them or buying the assets, I guess. The only other example I could find was the Ouya deal. So Ouya was this huge splash on Kickstarter. It was a small Android-based game-playing unit with a controller that was a little cube, and you could not only run a bunch of games and buy games on it, but you could also load up all your emulators, and people were just salivating about how they could hack this thing, and it was this big deal, and a bunch of people bought them. I know a lot of people that ended up buying one. I have one. And it wasn't too long after that big, splashy success, similar to what Pebble experienced, at least, you know, front-facing success, that Razer came in and scooped them up and essentially gutted them, hired a bunch of their software engineers, and Ouya have ceased to exist. And Razer never released, you know, their version of an Ouya. This isn't like, you know, Dell buying, who'd they buy? Alienware. And suddenly Alienware is still a brand that's just sort of being handled there, or Instagram is owned by Facebook, but they're sort of running independently. This is definitely one of those cases. And I just feel like Kickstarter is literally that, a place to kickstart something. And if it doesn't succeed, even if it succeeds, it doesn't mean it has the long legs to really succeed the way that a product needs to in today's competitive market. So I feel like this is just a mirror image of that, and we'll get past it. And thankfully, the Pebbles that were shipped are good. They work. It's not like there was a recall in progress or anything weird like that. So I think it'll all pass over, you know, with enough time.
What I would hope is that I would like to see Kickstarter not start to feel like a tryout for acquisition by bigger and different companies, because sometimes that's the way it feels like. You know, we're not sure if this is going to be something interesting. Then they put it out there on Kickstarter and they put out a product that's okay, you know, the best that they can do for what they earned. And then next thing you know, they get acquired, they roll into another company, they get bought out, whatever it might be, and now the thing you kickstarted is gone, and now it's a part of the products that are already out there, which I think ultimately hurts consumer interest in kickstarting things.
Yeah, fair point.
Ted Sarandos at Netflix was speaking Monday at the UBS Global Media and Communications Conference in New York City and said Netflix plans to release 20 unscripted series in 2017. And that's industry jargon for reality shows, competition shows, things like that. They're planning to spend $6 billion on original content in 2017. That's up from $5 billion in 2016. And regarding sports, he said, don't look for us to be bidding for league rights, but did say that league creation could be something the company would be interested in. So a couple interesting things here. One is, you know, we could have a Netflix singing competition or cooking competition or something like that. Also, a Netflix esports league.
Yeah. See, that's exactly where my head's at. So, okay. So two things here that I think are really positive. I don't know why I feel this way about Netflix. Anybody else announcing this, I might not think about it this way, but for whatever reason, I think of it this way. This is a chance for reality programming to not be the cookie cutter by the numbers stuff that we have for the most part, our network television and cable now. It's a chance for them to worry a little bit less about editorial or what to keep in or what to keep out and actually aim for whatever your goal is for your reality show. You're going to have more freedom to do it. At least that's the feeling I always get about Netflix deals. The creators get a lot of, you know, leeway. So that to me is exciting because I don't really like reality TV until I see a show and I'll go, oh, now that's good reality TV. And usually those don't last as long. I don't need another Voice. I don't need another American Idol. I certainly don't need any more Housewives of Orange County or any other county. But I sure could go for something different and cool, Mythbustery sort of stuff. And I think the fact that they
don't forget, Mythbusters is a reality show.
Right. It totally is. It very much it is. It's just not about humiliation and treating each other bad.
It's just one you like, so most people don't want to call it that.
Yeah.
Right. But also, and in that case, the Fall of the White Rabbit thing is basically them saying, hey, we're going to excise those who, but some of the people that made Mythbusters great, we're going to launch a new series with it. I have really good faith in what that may end up being for programming for them. Secondly, the esports angle is a really interesting one. The only company we've seen take a real mainstream interest outside of, you know, ESPN covers it, smaller companies cover it, but in terms of like putting stuff on television and having people watch it is Turner with their E-League coverage and what they do with Counter-Strike Global Operations, Global Offensive, whatever it is. I just know it as GO. I don't know what it actually stands for now that I think about it. But they've got that going on. It's been very successful for them. It's high production value. They got great commentators and casters. They have, amazing play. And they just finished up their this year's playoffs and winners and everything. I would love it if we could see more of that. So, John, what do you want to see? I mean, you and I, we tilt Blizzard, but what do you think? What do you think an esports effort on Netflix might actually look like? Because that stuff's usually live. How would it work if it isn't live? Is this like documentary stuff? Like, what do you want to see?
I don't know. That's a good question. Documentaries for sure. I kind of fell into watching that documentary about Heroes of the Dorm while I was going through and catching up on everything I missed because I was at BlizzCon, so I saw none of BlizzCon. Yeah. And I ended up watching that documentary, and I actually really liked it. And I think that stuff would be interesting and compelling. And I'll say one of my biggest problems with esports in general is sometimes it's really hard to find the VODs for these things. Sometimes they're located on Twitch and you got to watch past broadcasts. Sometimes they have their own site. Sometimes you just have to download the replay and you lose all the commentary. If there was a nice, easy to access place to watch these things, that might be beneficial as well.
Yeah, like an archive of the best games of the year or of all of it or whatever. I mean, Netflix, and also Netflix is, I mean, they've never come out and done it directly, but they've teased live programming before, haven't they? Like maybe we'd get into some kind of something.
They've mostly denied it. They've mostly said they never wanted to do live programming. Mm. But they, I guess what they haven't done is said, I can't remember exactly what they've said, to be honest, but I know they've steered away from live in the sense of we're not going to do the Oscars. We're not going to do live sports. Mm-hmm. but they certainly have the capability of doing it. So maybe there is a little bit of crack of a door open there that says, okay, but if we're doing our own league series, then maybe we would want to do that live. It would be a huge departure for them to do things live, though.
Yeah, I'd be okay. I mean, so here's a little spin that's similar. Why don't they just say, all right, we are going to follow, let's use Overwatch as the example. We're going to follow this year's Overwatch League, and we're going to do it from, you know, the preliminaries all the way to BlizzCon when everything ends. They cover all of that, not in a sort of live, this is where I go for my latest information way, but once a year, there's a 8-part miniseries documentary that covers the entire thing behind the scenes, which players got sick and couldn't fly from China. That guy couldn't get his passport. These guys are a huge rivalry, blah, blah, blah. Like, all that stuff's super interesting if handled in a cool sort of documentary style, and having separate interviews with people. Again, that fits with the unscripted series thing they're talking about. So maybe this is just part of that. Like, that would be fine with me. If they're not going to go live, then I guess that would that'd be a good idea. So there you go. Very exciting. Good job there, Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
And there's people in the chat room like, all unscripted is really scripted. And I'm like, well, they don't mean unscripted. They mean nonfiction. Well, all nonfiction is really fictional because it's all made up. And I'm like, okay, you can define the terms to make yourself right about whatever you want. That's fine. Yeah. But what we're saying is there are things like Game of Thrones, and there are things like Mythbusters, and there's a difference between the two, and that's what we're talking about. Apparently, we can't, you know, we have to be politically correct about the word we pick around it. Nice. The CW told comicbook.com that Mr. Mitzelpix will come to Supergirl in 2017. Mr. Mitzelpix is a trickster and can be sent away by tricking him into saying or writing his own name backwards, which in the comics, he very often is tricked into doing, although you'd think he'd be really good at not doing that.
Yeah.
If I had two things that I was just needed to be careful, whatever you do, don't do these two things, I think I'd probably be a little more alert about it than maybe he proves out to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'm looking, by the way, at some pictures of Mixoplex. He's shown up before in animated series. He is in lots of stuff. I'm trying to dig down, look at some of the old comics. Yeah. He's just like this little munchkin-y looking kind of goblin dude, and he's up to no good all the time, so sure, why not? We may as well. He's basically Marvel's, John, remind me, who's the Marvel character that flies around and his head's giant but his body's tiny?
MODOK?
He reminds me of DC's MODOK. And I know they're totally different, like what they do and how they do it is totally different, but just these characters that are in the Silver Age and other times in comics that are just so stupid. Some of these villains are so dumb. And I think Mixoplex falls into that category for me, and I'm more than happy to see a modern incarnation of Mr. Mixoplex.
It's sometimes fun to have drama that's brought about by somebody being mischievous more than evil. You know, sure. You can only do so much. Oh, it's doom and gloom. The world's going to end. Everything's awful. Sometimes it's fun to have your episode where there's just somebody messing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's like the Toy Man on Flash.
Oh yeah. Good comparison. Sure. And then to some degree, the Joker's like that. I mean, he's been fleshed out in lots of other more compelling ways than just he causes, you know, stirs up a little trouble, but he's the original troll. Like, he just wants to troll everybody. And a lot of the time that's his entire job. And certainly this character embodies that a bit, but he's just, it's silly. And therefore I'm for it, man. I say, don't hold back. I used to be worried about this stuff, but you know what? You pulled off Ant-Man just fine. Somehow Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow are all doing stuff together on TV, and it's fun and great. Like, they're pulling it off. So who am I to say you can't do it? James Gunn alone made it possible with Guardians 1. So let's just be as dumb and weird as we want. Bring in all the weird characters like Quilt Man. You know who Quilt Man is? Let's bring in Quilt Man. He walks around in clothes made out of a bunch of quilt. Or maybe he's called Patch Man or something, but he's like a quilt. It's the dumbest thing ever, but why not? Bring him in.
But you'll be happy to have him around if you need something out of a hot oven.
Right.
I'm just saying, right?
Well said. Big thanks to everybody who submits stories, by the way, for us. We get those, for the most part, from our subreddit. Tom, who gave us help this week?
Oh, well, we got help from S. Snapier, I Am Sci-Fi, Candrius, KiloCharlie12, N-Zone Ad, and more. So get in there and join them. Morvana was the one who put up the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 trailer, for example. I Am Sci-Fi put up the Mr. Mitzelpick story. Mm. Currentgeek.reddit.com. That's where we get our story ideas.
All right. Before we go to the quiz where John is competing literally with himself, we got a quick moment here to talk about our friends over at Stay Roasted at stayroasted.com/geek. These guys are awesome, and the entire episode is brought to you by them. They make top quality coffee that is not a luxury. It's a necessity. If you like good coffee, like Tom Merritt, he loves his good coffee, then you're probably going to really like Stay Roasted. Tom, you've used the Stay Roasted method. What do you think of it?
I do like it. I've, like I said last week, I've tried a bunch of these different coffee subscription services, and lots of them have good coffee. I have to say, this has given me some of my favorite coffees. I'm not even lying about that. Like the first pack we got, I'm like, I'm going to reorder this, which you can do. Also, I like the fact that you can go in and say, oh, you know what? I'm going to be out of town for a couple of weeks. Let me just put this on pause. It's the easiest way to manage the subscription and when the coffee comes that I've seen.
Yeah. It's like the old Netflix DVD system, which still exists, I guess, where you'd put stuff in a queue and you could pause it if you want to, change things up, have a different bean roast sent to you, whatever. That's what they're doing. It's super easy. There's no long-term commitments. Stay Roasted delivers 100% specially grade coffee beans, hand-selected to your taste, and delivers them fresh. It's that simple. So here's what I want to do. I want you guys to get a free bag for yourself. By the way, the stuff costs maybe 60 cents per brewed cup. I mean, think of that. That's a lot cheaper than going to Starbucks, I'm just saying. No offense, Starbucks. I like you guys and everything, but this is a lot cheaper than that. And you're getting, you know, really good beans, a great commitment to quality. So try it for yourself. Go to stayroasted.com/geek and get your first bag of coffee for free. You only pay shipping. So you get that bag for free. Shipping's all you pay. That's stayroasted.com/geek. They also have gift cards and the like. So for this holiday season, there's no better gift than stayroasted.com/geek.
America scores and wins.
All right, John. Spotlight's on you, buddy.
All right. Nervous.
Yeah. No need. He is. I think you were made for this topic that I'm about to give you. Before I do that, I'll explain this. How this works is a pop quiz. We ask our guests questions in their areas of expertise. If they get answers right, if they get them wrong, Tom will add it all up with his weird scoring system. And by the end, well, you'll have a better idea of where John stands in the world. John, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here is your topic. Super Nintendo Entertainment System games.
Okay.
Or as one might say, SNES games. Okay? So SNES trivia. Are you ready? Here we go.
All right.
Number one question. What company developed Donkey Kong Country?
Oh, Rare.
That is correct. Rare did. They eventually got bought by Microsoft. They are still technically owned by them and have not done a lot in the last few years.
That's just a straight ahead correct answer, 1 point.
Yeah.
Just so nice. You know.
Yeah, solid, man. Solid.
Good, solid work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here's your next one. What was the first game to use Mode 7 graphics? Oh, man. It was a good time.
Mode 7. I can't remember which one which made up weird Super NES technology was supposed to be Mode 7. I don't think that's the VFX chip, that which would be like Star Fox and stuff like that. I think Mode 7 was the little scrolling thing. I don't know. The first game I remember that was probably F-Zero.
That is correct. F-Zero is correct.
I knew if I just kept talking long enough, it would just come to me.
I was about to give you a, you know, partial credit for this or that, and then you just nailed it with another single point again. Yep. Well done.
You're right about the scrolling thing. It was like this feeling of, not 3D, but you got perspective. Like the ground would look like a big textured mess, but it seemed like you were going towards something. It was a weird tech. Yeah. All right. What year did the original Mortal Kombat get released on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System?
Jeez. All right. Now we're into my trouble area, which is numbers and years.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be embarrassing because I'll probably pick a time before like the Super Nintendo was even out. So anybody that's really good with years will just be like, John, there wasn't even a Super Nintendo.
They were making playing cards then.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say 1991.
1991 is incorrect. The year is 1993.
All right. Well,
so you get 0.8 for being that close.
I waited in line for that horrible version of that game.
Did you really?
Yeah. And it had sweat in it instead of blood. It was
awful. Oh, the sweat was dumb.
It was so dumb. Next up, what was the name of the Super Nintendo light gun peripheral?
The Super Scope.
That is correct. Doing well so far. Jeez. The Super Scope is correct. I used to have one of those as well. Don't know where it is. Somewhere hidden in my house.
I would have called it the Super Nintendo light gun peripheral.
Yes, you would have. It's very practical, though. I don't follow you for that. Final question. This is the big one. What year did Nintendo release Super Metroid?
Let's see. I'm going to say 92. Let's go right between Mortal Kombat and what I guessed for Mortal Kombat.
All right. 1992. Is that correct? Incorrect. It was 1994 is the correct answer.
Oh, another wow. 0.8.
Yeah, 0.8 on that one. All right. Those are your questions. Tom, how did he do?
Well, with those two, like within 2 years answers, he ends up with 4.6 out of 5.
It's not bad.
Right?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, it seems like a respectable showing.
Definitely.
Yeah. If you, well, I mean, I can't speak for other people that would have been here, but had they been, they would have had a hard time against you, I think.
I'm just going to say the percentage point for within the range is in the second section of the rule book.
Yeah.
You know, there's the first section that's very straightforward, then the second section of exceptions. This is the first time we've never gotten to the third section of the rule book, which is the vast majority of the million plus pages of the trivia rules.
Yeah. Tom's got the only edition, first, last, and only edition of the trivia rules. So well done,
Somebody's
John.
Got to do it.
You performed well today. Congratulations. Let's dive into this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's time for forecast. It's a little segment brought to you by our friends at Casper.com. At Casper.com, they combine two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and bounce. I have one of these mattresses, and my favorite thing about them is I did not have to go to some store and lay on a bed and figure it out. They sent me one, and I had 100 days to evaluate it. That's 100 days to evaluate my mattress from Casper.com. I ended up loving it. In that time, I could have sent it back 100% free, including shipping. But nope, I hung on to it. I kept it, and I loved it, and I think you will too. Why pay storeroom prices when you can pay much less at Casper.com? Casper mattresses for $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. You know how much cheaper that is than the average store. Here, I want to make you guys an additional deal. $50 off any mattress purchase. Think of the Christmas gift this could be for somebody you love. By going to Casper.com/currentgeek and enter the promo code currentgeek. That's Casper.com/currentgeek. And for $50 off, use the code currentgeek. I know I always say this used to be a show, but it was. It was a real fun show Tom and I did, and we turned it into a segment to keep it alive. It's where we predict the future in the areas of pop culture, science, whatever, technology. It doesn't matter. It's all open for discussion. And I picked one this time. This is probably proof that I'm reading too much of the Expanse novels. So, ironically enough, it was part of our news,
it
too.
It calls back to the earlier conversations in the show.
It definitely does. But I think our next great world war, everyone talks about, you know, have we learned enough about world conflict that we will ever have another world war on the scale of World War II or one or even greater, and not just sort of pocketed conflicts and small to medium-sized conflicts, but a full-blown world war. And I think it will not happen until we have figured out a way to make it out to the outer, it's out of our atmosphere and into the parts of our solar system that currently have maybe unknown resources, but resources nonetheless. We start tapping into those resources. They become a commodity, and things happen politically, economically, and socially that make it so that now we're fighting over that stuff. So the rich uranium mines of Mars or the whatever it may be, somebody's got to control that. Those things end up starting wars, and our next great world war will actually not be, although the world may be involved and eviscerated, it will end up being a something that will happen across our solar system. And it
will be a world's war.
A world's war, yeah. And there, I mean, again, the Expanse, one of the conceits of the Expanse is that there has been for hundreds of years a colony on Mars, not just a colony, but now a complete civilization that's growing and thriving there.
And that is independent of Earth.
Is independent of Earth, right. And they are a strong military power. Earth is a stronger resource power. And maybe political power, but not so much a military power in that thing. And it all rings really true, like the way this kind of thing might work out. So I think that that will come. When will it come? I don't know. We got a lot to do before we can even visit these places, let alone travel to and fro or, you know, create situations where an actual war might take place. But will it involve nukes? I don't know. Will it be ship-to-ship combat? I don't know that either. But I again, the book's probably influencing me, but I do think we're...
How do we avoid another world war on Earth is the question. Mm. And if we do, then it becomes easy to see, like, well, if we figure out how to all get along on Earth, then it's more likely that we figure out how to colonize Mars. And then from there, you can sort of see, like any colonial history, how the colonies want independence and then drift apart from each other, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. It's going to be hard to say. John, thoughts on a global versus spatial war, I guess?
Yeah, I think the first thing that you see is, obviously, I think the big driving force is who's going to stake the claim? You know, who finds chemical X on the moon and is like, well, this is for us, obviously. And then another country says, no, it isn't. But if we can manage that, because I don't think that turns into a space war, right? That's just a war on Earth about space things, which could happen. But if we can get past that and we can say, okay, well, we've divvied up space the way it needs to be. I actually think what you were saying with the Expanse is accurate. You end up with a governing body out in space that's independent of Earth so that they can't represent individual nations' interests and they have to represent their own. And then next thing you know, they're the ones that are going at it against Earth.
Yeah.
So I can see that. Sure. That seems plausible to me.
Yeah. I mean, if we can get out there in the way that these things predict, then it's, I feel like it's inevitable because this is just the way we are. We'll get out there and our universe will be much larger for us at that point. We will have expanded much further than we had previously. And then we'll think that now we have these limits. Here are these walls. And who controls what's in those walls now, as arbitrary as they may be? And then fights happen. It just happens. We repeat this. We do it every time. It's kind of a depressing notion. But because I'm enjoying this science fiction saga in these books right now, it's easy for me to want to try to, you know, get in there and think about it. But yeah, I think
you'd have to really dig into like what causes these massive wars.
Right.
And it has to do more with misunderstandings and prestige combined with resource issues. Like if you listen to Dan Carlin's hardcore history about World War I, there is not one reason that World War I began. It took a lot of different things, a lot of old tensions, a lot of issues over particular resources that weren't even necessarily essential. It wasn't like there was starvation going on. When there's starvation, you can't feed an army, right? So you actually need to be fairly prosperous to conduct a world war. But it was this sort of domino effect of instances of people wanting to like, oh, well, I think we can take a quick advantage of this situation that just led from one thing to one thing to one thing. And the scariest part about World War I and that hardcore history is how clear it is that no one thought it could happen because they thought they had all the pieces in place to prevent it, right? Mm-hmm. It would be in no one's interest for there to be a world war. So there never could be a big world war in Europe. And yet we had two. So I'm still struggling with, have we had our last one here?
Yeah.
You know, and before I can start thinking about, okay, so the next one will be in space. Because if like I said, if we have figured it out down here, even though right now it doesn't really look like it, then yeah, then we can all pull together and get to space. And then, yes, then the distances in space for communication and travel will lead to misunderstandings and like, you know, whatever molecule X we find out there in the asteroids, like John's saying, it could cause a scuffle. But I'm still not convinced we've had our last big one here.
Maybe it's just hopeful, you know, me being hopeful. But here,
I mean, I hope you're right. Right. I hope I'm way wrong.
It'd be nice if we never had another big war of that scale and destruction and loss of life like that. But the other thing that is interesting about the Expanse, to go back to that, is they not only create this big sort of military political complex that's happening, but they also create some just downright down to the ground, good old fashioned bias and racism that they build around what it's like to be an Earther versus a Belter versus a somebody who's from Mars. the Mars guys and the people from Earth, while a lot alike in lots of ways, look at each other like they could not be more foreign than each other. And the Belters especially, they can't even survive on Earth because of the way gravity treats their bodies from birth. They're lucky to have been born at all, it turns out, in a lot of what they explain in the book. And they can't be sent to Earth without that being a horrible, excruciating, awful thing. And they're just treated badly, like big, misshapen, weirdly shaped, you know, proto-humans that don't look anything like us. And that part is both fascinating to me and you know, strikes a chord, as it's supposed to, I'm sure, but also freaks me out. I don't want our space age to be us going, meh, those Belters with their weird heads. And, you know, we start discriminating based
those
on like
tall, skinny Belters coming in here, taking our jobs.
Yeah, get out of here. Back to where you came from, Belter. Anyway, it's fascinating to me, that kind of stuff. So let's hope I'm right that we're done here. And let's hope I'm wrong.
Todd DeGosa in chat just went long bones.
Yeah, he's right. Long bones. That's basically isn't that one of the names they call him?
Yeah.
Hold on. I got to ask you about this, though, Scott. Maybe you just didn't mention it. So you said Earthers, Belters, and people from Mars. There's no cool name for people from Mars.
I can't remember.
They don't get a cool.
Right? I think it's just Martians.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? All right. I just wanted to make sure. I was like, hold on. Somebody's really getting the short end of the cool name stick on
this. Belter's a pretty cool name. Yeah. Earther, yeah, okay, I'd rather be a Terran, but whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Martian is actually kind of the coolest, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's the best.
Also, their tech and their ships, that stuff's so much
cooler.
I am
a Martian.
Those guys are bad, eh?
They also all have Texas accents because it was colonized by Texas.
And Texas,
even though they're not all Texans.
Yeah, it's Texas and India. Because at some point, isn't the story, Tom, somewhere that Texas was independent and became its own thing and then...
Yeah, and did a colony on Mars. Right. And so that the way kind of like our American accent is actually a derivative of an older English accent.
Right.
And a lot of the ways we say things sound really archaic to people in England because we diverged. Mm-hmm. Right. And we stuck with things from the 1700s. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the idea, is that on Mars, it started by Texans. And so even though it's not made up of Texans anymore, that Texas accent persists, even mm-hmm. though it may have gone away on Earth.
Yeah. And it's a lot of Fantastic. People. It's a lot of people from India who live there. And,
well, Alex Kamal, the pilot of the Rocinante, is an Indian by descent, but speaks with a Texas accent, and he's 100% Martian.
Yeah, he talks like Sam Elliott, and it's awesome. And in the TV show, they nail it. He's perfect in the TV show. That actor couldn't have picked a better guy. John, if we've done anything today, it's to convince you that you got to watch The Expanse and read the books.
I'm in. This keeps sounding cooler and cooler intervention goes on.
It's really good. All right, Paul D. sent us an email, which came to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. You're, of course, encouraged at home to send us your emails when and where you like. Says this, hi Tom and Scott. I have some feelings about the new Spider-Man Homecoming trailer. Everyone else in that thing feels like stunt casting. Tony Stark, references to the Avengers, Birdman playing Vulture. Am I being too old and cranky? Paul D. Well, yes. Paul D.
Yes, the answer is probably yes.
Probably.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's good. Just embrace it. Embrace your old and crankiness.
I like the idea that Birdman and Batman playing the Vulture. Yeah, there's something cool about Michael Keaton in that role. Plus, he's at an all-time actor high right now, so we're going to get a really great chew-up-the-scenery sort of performance, probably. And Tony Stark established his connection with Peter Parker in the last Civil War, right? So there's that connection. I mean, I guess if you're all in on the MCU-ness of it, then this is probably a dream come true. If you would,
I will side a little bit with Paul here, though. And I didn't have a problem with seeing Robert Downey Jr., but the Tony Stark appearances didn't strike me as the best ones. And maybe that's just they didn't pick the right scenes for the trailer yet because it's so far ahead. I don't know.
Yeah, it did look like, well, part of this, too, didn't look like it was there weren't like effects heavy moments in this. A couple of little shots, but you can tell there's still work being done. Probably we'll get better trailers as time goes on. But I think that kid nails it. He looks like Peter Parker. He sounds like him. He acts like him. Like the school stuff looks great.
Oh, I liked him in Civil War, so nothing changed that about me for this trailer.
Yeah, that kid is ripped. Man, if I looked like that at 16 or whatever he is, hubba hubba, man, the girls would have been everywhere. But I had the opposite body. I was a skinny, ropey Belter.
Had a concave chest. Yeah.
I look like a Belter. I couldn't live on Earth. It was awful.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, I got to drag out my soapbox.
All right, bring it. All right, bring it.
Set it up, John. Preach
it to him. Big Spider-Man fan, so I have strong opinions.
All right.
Also, Paul D., know that I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. So, you know, if you disagree with all of this, it's just because I'm fanboying out a bit.
Right.
I couldn't have been more excited about this trailer. And I find that while I understand some of the criticisms I'm seeing about this trailer, I don't agree with them at all. I think we've been wanting Spider-Man in the MCU. It's what we've been asking for. And then people get him interacting with characters from the MCU and they're like, it's just referencing the Avengers and there's Iron Man. That's what we wanted. That's what we've been going for this whole time. We were like, Sony, just give Marvel the rights back so they can make a good movie. Yeah. And now they're kind of doing it. And now everyone's like, oh, it's dumb.
Yeah. In fact, it's the best of two worlds. They're working together. Like, it's finally there's like a chance here to make things right.
We're finally there. Let's enjoy it. Right. Let's have a good time with it.
Sure.
I think that's the problem is they just aren't that good of a scene. Mm. Right. And that's what I was trying to say is, you know, Robert Downey Jr. reaching over for a hug and then, oh, no, I was just trying to get the door. That's a throwaway moment in Iron Man or the Avengers or Captain America that you would never see in a trailer. It's not the funniest moment he has in this movie, I'm going to bet. Mm-hmm. But it's the one they put in the trailer because they had it ready, right? And it's not bad. Yeah. But all those moments felt a little bit of a letdown. Like, oh, well, if I was going to see Iron Man, I wanted to see something better than this. The one that got me excited again is when you see the Iron Man suit show up flying alongside Spider-Man. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I wanted to see.
No, it's a great connection. I think it's going to be great. And I don't know. I mean, how do we know until we get there anyway? Let's just also calm down and watch the movie. Yes.
When you have a hero and they're going through the learning to be a hero, and this is the first hero we're really getting that, because usually it's Doctor Strange. Oh, he's got to learn how to use his powers, and then he learns it in a montage. Like, Spider-Man is the first hero where he's probably not going to learn to be a great hero until a couple movies in.
Mm-hmm.
He's still learning. And thank goodness we're not getting another Uncle Ben, probably. We're not Uncle Ben, nowhere to be seen in this trailer.
Right. Well, they said there's not going to be an origin story. We're going to pick up that he's already Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think having a father-like figure in there in the role of Robert Downey Jr., probably the worst candidate for father-like figure for him. I think it's going to be funny. I think it's going to be good. Yeah. So maybe you're being a little cranky. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hopeful.
It's all right to be cranky. Go for it.
Either way, let's be excited.
Be excited and cranky. You can be both at the same time. You can be crank-sided, right?
Crank-sided.
That's right.
I'm so crank-sided about Spider-Man.
I'm ex-sanky. No, that doesn't work as well.
I think there's a trend that it's kind of hip to be angry these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people see something and they immediately like, okay, how can I be the angriest guy on this and win the anger competition, you know, and come up with the most biting comment in the thread? If you want to go with everyone else and conform, then be angry.
Yeah, be angry. Be like all the rest of the angry people. For us, we're going in there on the 7th of July.
The trend.
That's right. We're taking it over, man. And then a week later, we'll see that Transformers movie. Probably not. All right. That's going to do it for the show.
The funniest thing is we started watching the Spider-Man trailer and the Transformers trailer started by accident.
Yeah.
And it was after. It was after the Spider-Man trailer. The Transformers trailer started. And Eileen was like, how do I stop it? Like, it won't hurt you.
All you got to do is stop it and go watch The Rock, and then you feel good about Michael Bay again, and then you can watch it. It's fine.
By the way, total side note, big benefit of the wife's new job was that she knew when this trailer was dropping early.
Oh, yeah, she works at Fandango.
She's like, you can't say anything about it, but Spider-Man trailer's coming at this time.
Yeah. Like, do you get any kind of advance warning on just announcements in general? Is it always just when trailers are going to drop? Do you know,
movieclips.com is part of Fandango. So it's a lot of that. Right. I don't know what else she'll get. She probably won't tell me is the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And also she works for Fandango. So everyone calm down. See, we have to do the disclaimer now. That's how we do it. Well, all right. There you go, Paul D. We may disagree, but we still love you and your email. And you can certainly send your own, dear listeners. Currentgeek@gmail.com is where you'll want to send it before we go. However, I'd like to give John Jagger a chance to tell people where he can be found on the internet. John, what's going on with you? What's going on? What's happening?
Oh, so much. It's been a busy month. So the best place to find out what I'm doing is to just follow me on Twitter @John_Jagger. You can hear me talk about Heroes of the Storm on Core @heroesforyou.com or World of Warcraft. And find out more @AzerothRoundtable.com.
All of it worthy endeavors. Tom Merritt, anything else this week you'd like to mention?
Well, yeah, the thing that I was lying about to you at the top of the show that I had to be finished at 5 o'clock for was Damn Fine Podcast, the new Twin Peaks podcast with Ron Richards and I, rewatching all of the Twin Peaks shows and season one, season two, in anticipation of it returning to Showtime. If you want the film insights, the I fanboy brain of Ron Richards combined with this guy talking about Twin Peaks, you got to go subscribe to damnfinepodcast.com. We're three episodes in, and we were going to record another episode right after this, but it's got delayed. But there are more coming. There will be one every Wednesday until we run out of episodes or Showtime starts up. So check it out, damnfinepodcast.com.
Very nice. John, thanks again for being on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. Love being here.
Being on Current Geek is a good time. It's going to do it for us. CurrentGeek.com for everything else. People, go there. Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson on Twitter. Ace Detect on Twitter for Tom. CurrentGeek.reddit.com. And, of course, that email again is CurrentGeek@gmail.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for John. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week we review a Kickstarter mashup book project involving Star Trek and Dr. Seuss and whether it properly died on the Kickstarter vine thanks to intellectual property infringement allegations. A team of comics and science fiction writers teamed up under the company Comic Mix LLC to launch a book project called Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go, a book about Trekkie characters using Seuss-style rhymes and drawings. The book was in the process of raising nearly $30,000 on Kickstarter in the month of September, and predictably, that raised the hackles of one of the IP owners being parodied. This time, it was the estate of Dr. Seuss, known as Dr. Seuss Enterprises, which objected to this book as a slavish copying of copyrighted works of the author, and also as trademark infringement, based on the likelihood of confusion with one of Seuss's best-selling books, Oh, the Places You'll Go. Paramount and CBS have not yet joined the case on behalf of Star Trek's intellectual property. This lawsuit, filed in California, did not slip through unnoticed, and powerful lobbying organizations like Pope Hat called for an attorney in the area to represent these creators of the book pro bono, aka for free, to defend what they believe to be a clear fair use under copyright law. Fair use as a copyright infringement defense is a four-factor balancing test, as we've covered before. Here, there are arguments cutting both ways on some of these factors. Seuss Enterprises believes that this work would undercut a part of the market for their own original works, while Comic Mix does not see any harm to Seuss's marketplace. The purpose and character of the use is believed by Seuss Enterprises to be commercial, and therefore disfavored, while Comic Mix looks at this as a transformative parody work, typically protected by fair use. As to the amount or substantiality of the portion of Seuss's work taken, Seuss Enterprises shows some highly similar drawing panels in the complaint, but Comic Mix believes it is only used in oft-parodied style rather than lifting any particular story arcs from Seuss or a pre-existing Star Trek episode. The facts actually look close enough to make it an open question whether the fair use defense will be available. What may be more damaging is the trademark claim, considering the identical goods of a book and the highly similar names but for one added word. Oh, the Places You'll Go has sold well as a graduation present and the like for many decades, and it may indeed be confusing to consumers whether this Trek parody comes from Seuss Enterprises or would be licensed by such. The bottom line is, there may be too many mistakes made here to save this Kickstarter project. Yet again, merely approaching the parties up front for an inexpensive license could have potentially avoided a lot of legal bills, project delays, and frustration. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.